Now, we've talked a lot on the program about Atlantis, but what about before Atlantis? In a moment, Mark Carlotto joins us with his latest work, Before Atlantis, New Evidence Suggesting the Existence of a Previous Technological Civilization on Earth. Really looking forward to that. Mark's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let me introduce you to Mark Carlotto. Mark, this is the first time I've had a chance to talk with Mark. He had been on a couple times way back with Art many years ago. Mark Carlotto is an aerospace engineer with more than 30 years of experience in satellite imaging, remote sensing, image processing, pattern recognition. Now, he received his PhD in electrical engineering from Carnegie Mellon University back in 1981. He is published a number of technical articles and books. Dr. Carlotto contributed extensively, folks, to the investigation of the face and other structures in the Cydonia region of Mars, analyzed anomalous objects, space shuttle videos, and participated in a recent study of unusual surface features on the far side of the moon as well. My pleasure to introduce Mark Carlotto. And Mark, I'm really looking forward to this. Welcome back after all these years.
Good morning, George. Thanks for having me.
I have heard so much about you, my friend. Just absolutely staggering. I don't know why we haven't had you on before I came on.
Well, I've been taking a break since the Mars investigation, doing some other things more of local interest in where I live in Massachusetts.
Oh, super, super. Let me ask you a little bit about Cydonia. We won't dwell on it too much. But, of course, it was a hot topic years ago with you, Vince DiPietro, and Richard Hoagland and folks like that. What was it about that you saw that got you involved in it?
Well, it was a newspaper article in the Boston Globe in 1985 that had a picture of the face and, you know, a statement that, you know, most mainstream planetary scientists thought that this is simply a, you know, an eroded rock formation. And it so clearly looked otherwise that, you know, it piqued my interest and I wanted to find out for myself. And, you know, one thing led to another. I met Richard Hoagland and Brian O'Leary and Vince, you mentioned, and John Brandenburg. And we spent many years looking at this, analyzing the, my work was on the on analyzing the face, shape from shading, revealing it was a real three-dimensional formation, not a trick of light and shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some more quantitative analysis using a technique we developed at the time for automatic target recognition called fractal analysis for detecting man-made objects and natural backgrounds. It showed the face was, you know, quantitatively different from the background. And, you know, my focus is on publishing the science behind, you know, behind the investigation. And, yeah, it was 10-plus years, a lot of fun.
Sure was. And at that point, have you changed your mind at all about Cydonia?
Well, my conclusion, what I came to sort of feeling was that we're looking at highly eroded archaeology. Estimates from hundreds of thousands to millions of years old, and perhaps billions of years old in some estimates. And there was it was just so much you could do from up above in satellite imagery, and it was clear that we needed to send a rover there. We needed to do analysis, up front and personal, and it was going to be a while until that happened. So, at that point, I kind of, there wasn't anything more I could do. I felt, and I still do, I feel that there is something there, something unusual, very old. I still can't really tie it back to anything on Earth. The gap is just too great.
Mm-hmm.
Between that timeline of, you know, when Mars had water and when, you know, intelligent life evolved on Earth. And so I sort of wrapped it up. There wasn't anything more I could do, and I put it aside for a while.
Would you say, Mark, that it's a natural structure with artificial workings in it?
You know, if it were just the face, I might say that, but because of its proximity to these other objects that, you know, Hoagland referred to as the city.
Right.
And then actually, when you take a step back and look at an extended area on Mars, there's something called the crustal dichotomy, and it all had to do with, you know, this hypothesis, and it looks like it's probably got a lot of evidence to support it now of a vast northern ocean. There was, and I actually had a paper published at a conference at JPL in the late 90s. Actually, it was 2003, looking at the similarity in alignments and scale of the face, the city, and other landforms in the area. I noticed that there was a correlation, whether it was because of what's called a crustal dichotomy, which is supposed to be a geological process, or something else. There was clearly some sort of consistency in alignment, and it suggested to me, you know, perhaps the way, you know, cities and civilization works by developing and expanding along patterns, and which is actually interesting because that ties into before Atlantis. But that was sort of the last thing that I had looked at, and I was kind of intrigued by that. So I would have to say I would weigh in on. I think there could be some evidence of ancient activity, intelligent activity on Mars. I would say, let's say 51%. I'll be real.
Well, that's pretty good percent still, I think.
Yeah.
I'm perplexed why NASA, Mark, still hasn't really tried to exploit that area, but maybe one day. What do you think?
I think probably Elon Musk will
do it for us.
He'll do it first. Yeah.
I love it. Well, tell me about your latest work before Atlantis. How did you get involved in this portion of your investigations?
It was total serendipity. We were preparing. We were going on vacation to Mexico about a year ago, and I wanted to visit some of the sites down there. So I started doing a little research on using Google Earth. Looking at Tulum and Chichen Itza and places like that, and I noticed that these sites were not aligned to north. And it actually kind of reminded me of when I was working on my second book, The Cydonia Controversy. One of the things I had looked at on Mars were alignments. Of course, Hoagland first suggested the possibility that the city and face might have been aligned to a solstice sunrise 500,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Van Flandern, late Tom Van Flandern, he was an astronomer, a colleague on the Mars investigation.
Yeah, missed that guy. I missed that.
Yes,
guy.
Yes, real solid scientist, great guy. He noticed that prior to Mars's current poles are such that the face is rotated at this angle. I think it's like 33 degrees, something like that. But he noticed that. Or determine that prior to this pole position, Mars's previous pole position was such that the city and face would have been located almost at the equator on Mars and oriented almost due north-south, almost to the cardinal directions. And so this led to the, idea that, maybe these things on Mars were lined up to the cardinal directions. It wasn't a solstice alignment, but they were aligned like many things are on Earth, in this grid pattern, and then when the pole shifted, everything kind of rotated. So, that was back in when I completed the Cydonia Controversy. It was like late 90s, early, it was like 2002. And what I had come across was a book that had just come out a few years previously by Rand Flem Ath and Rose Flem Ath, Canadian researchers, When the Sky Fell, I think was the name of the book.
They wrote about Antarctica, right?
They wrote about Antarctica. and that the idea was that now Antarctica or previously Antarctica was Atlantis.
Wow.
And there was a pole shift on Earth that caused Atlantis to rotate and shift to the South Pole. And although I wasn't, you know, into that at the time, that idea, part of what they talked about was how when the poles shift, things rotate. And they had mentioned that just sort of in passing that the Mexican site Teotihuacan was at one time, and they reference what was called the Hudson Bay Pole, the previous location of the North Pole, back 12 to 18,000 years ago, that this site, would have been rotated to be almost nearly north, south, east, west.
This was a huge shift, wasn't it?
It was a huge shift. It was a shift that moved not only rotated, with a pole shift, and when the geometry is a little hard to visualize because it's the rotation of a sphere, but it's sort of like a wheel. So, you have an axle, and, at some point you're simply dealing with a rotation, and at other places you're dealing with a shift like you would be on a wheel where you're moving laterally. So there was a little bit of both at the latitude and longitude of Teotihuacan. And so anyway, they noticed that it was aligned, would have been closely aligned to a pole. Not exactly. They were more interested in the fact that it would have been at a certain latitude. And anyway, so this is a long answer to your question.
No, we've got 2 hours, Mark. You got all the time you need.
Okay. So anyway, their observation was that, and it was sort of just sort of an aside, and I had taken notice of it. But then when I was looking, getting back to, Google Earth and looking at these sites in Mexico that I was planning on visiting, I noticed that, wow, yeah, these things are rotated. And so it got me thinking, I wonder if these sites are, were aligned to the Hudson Bay Pole,
mm-hmm.
like Teotihuacan. And, so I started, with Google Earth, you can take a line, you can go to that site, that place, draw a line with the ruler tool, and go all the way to the hypothesized pole, which was given in their book. And I, went to it and I found, the site I was going to was not aligned to that. So I started poking around, and one thing led to another, and I eventually thought, well, there were other pole positions. He listed three of them, the Hudson Bay Pole, and prior to that, a pole somewhere between Greenland and Europe, and then prior to that, a pole somewhere in the Yukon Territory. So I tried these locations, and I just started poking around and looking at other sites, not only in Mexico, but, other megalithic, colossal sites across the world, ancient sites, and finding, something seemed to be lining up, and this gradually led to the thought, well, perhaps these sites that are very old, that in many cases archaeologists don't have a really good explanation for, maybe they're aligned to one of Hapgood, one of these ancient poles. And I've gotten this far without talking about Charles Hapgood, who was the scientist. He was a professor at Keene State College in New Hampshire. Who came up with the idea of crustal displacements, pole shifts.
Now, what is that exactly?
So, the theory, and it's still widely held, that is that the ice ages patterns of glaciation occur due to global warming and cooling events.
Okay.
But Hapgood, in analyzing ice core samples and climate data and fossils and all sorts of other data, His analysis is quite detailed and extensive in his books. His book is called The Earth's Shifting Crust and followed by The Path of the Pole a few years later. He determined that another explanation for these patterns of glaciation and ice ages could have been the result of shifts of the geographic location of the North Pole. So not the magnetic pole, which is, you know, how compasses, you know, compasses measure in magnetic north, and you have to know the declination in order to correct, you know, your compass reading to true north. And the magnetic north varies over time. The magnetic poles drift. But he was actually proposing that the geographic pole shifts. And the mechanism was that the whole crust of the Earth would rotate, sort of like the skin of an orange over the fruit itself. And he believed this happened due to an asymmetrical buildup of ice that would cause it would create kind of a torque, and then the whole crust would slide over the mantle.
Mm-hmm. Almost like greasing the skids or something like that.
Something like that, right. So he proposed this as an explanation for the ice ages. And, you know, such a shift also, and this, you know, this is, I think, what got Plum Apps and others thinking about, you know, pole shifts as a mechanism for, worldwide or, you know, extensive cataclysms, because, you know, it's not the sort of thing that would necessarily affect the entire planet. It kind of depends on where you are. If you're sort of at the, you know, perhaps where the axle of the wheel is, you know, using that analogy, and the crust isn't shifting a lot where you are, just kind of rotating, perhaps the damage isn't as great as if it's moving thousands of miles in one direction or the other. And so this perhaps could have been an explanation for disasters, and could have been a trigger point for volcanic eruptions and all kinds of stuff that has been, you know, associated with, you know, these cataclysms throughout time. That, you know, even, you know, Plato mentions in his dialogues. And so, let me just get a drink of water here.
Sure, absolutely, because, I mean, Plato was the one who started it all in terms of our interest in Atlantis.
That's right, and really the only he's really the only source of that myth. Everything else pretty much has been an interpretation or some variation of that, and so this whole idea that you have now a possible physical event, a crustal shift, which, you know, again, when the crust shifts, the position of the North Pole changes. It's not the spin axis. The Earth is still spinning at the same, you know, it's still pointed towards Polaris. But when the surface slides over the mantle, that point that is at that pole moves from, you know, currently it's where it is.
Hold on, Mark. We're at the break. We'll come back and talk more with Dr. Mark Carlotto before Atlantis. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. We're with Dr. Mark Carlotto. His latest work is called Before Atlantis, subtitle important, New Evidence Suggesting the Existence of a Previous Technological Civilization on Earth, Before Atlantis. And what time period, Mark, are we talking about again? Are we talking 12,000 B.C.?
We're talking the last 100,000 years.
Wow. Way back.
Right. This is the period over which Hapgood hypothesized that there were three pole shifts.
Now, with these shifts, give me, in your best estimate, what kind of technological civilizations we had then.
So, the civilizations, the basic sort of fingerprint or consistent pattern that I see throughout all of these is actually really an assumption that we've always built, given, you know, all factors considered equal, we've always built to north. In other words, we tend to align structures our cities, our ceremonial sites, sacred sites, we tend to align them north, south, east, and west. And so previously, when the pole was in a different position, when these sites were built, they were aligned to north, but with the pole shift and the rotation, they're now misaligned. And so what happens is, as you go back in time, you find sites that are incredibly sophisticated. Archaeologists would say beyond, they would attempt to explain them in terms of, say, the technology of the Incas or the Egyptians. But, you know, oftentimes they're unable to really come up with a plausible explanation. It appears that there's some technology that, you know, exceeds the capabilities of the time of the Egyptians or the Incas and so forth. And as you go farther back in time, the oldest structures are structures such as those at Machu Picchu, Ollantaytambo, and also sites in Europe, in the sites like Baalbek in, mm-hmm. in Jordan, and structures at Petra in Jordan, and Knossos in Crete.
What about Göbekli Tepe?
Well, that's sort of what kicks this off, in a sense that, you know, this is sort of the this is now a pretty solid finding that's 10,000 BC, and it's coming around the time that primitive hunter-gatherers are just beginning to domesticate corn and wheat. So it's like, how could this possibly be? That doesn't have, Göbekli Tepe doesn't have the same sort of geometry that these other sites have. What I'm looking at with these other sites are rectangular structures or alignments that are that can be clearly measured and correlated to a compass, to a direction.
And when these pole shifts happen, Mark, are they violently fast, or is it done over hundreds, if not thousands, of years?
Okay, so the scientific evidence for pole shifts is that several, and this is based on what's called paleomagnetic data, and we can get into that if we have time. But the idea is that many hundreds of millions of years ago, in fact, around the time of the Cambrian explosion, about 500 million years ago, there was a major rotation of the Earth, 90 degrees, and this is responsible for all the changes that took place, or a contributor to the changes that took place on the planet at the time. Based on the paleomagnetic data, this was a change that took quite some time, took, you know, many millions of years to occur. But now, jumping, you know, fast forwarding, we're talking about smaller, more recent pole shifts. And if you believe Plato, take it literally as a source of historical fact, these shifts were rapid and cataclysmic, causing floods, volcanic eruptions, and so forth. So the hypothesis in Before Atlantis is that these more recent pole shifts were rather rapid and did cause the mayhem and the destruction that occurred at the time that is, you know, recorded in ancient legend and myth.
So what you surmise in your book was that there was something pretty dramatic in terms of technology before Atlantis. If so, where might that have been?
So the evidence is these incredible structures that we find throughout the world, these stones that are massive, hundreds of tons, worked with incredible precision, and you know these discoveries are well known. And I'm sure you've had numerous people on the show talking about them, comparing them, you know, sort of just the style, the way the stones are worked, the level of technology. What I've been able to show in this book is that these stones were assembled into structures that point in directions that correlate with previous locations of the North Pole. And it's not just one or two sites. There's over 50 sites and their major sites. And many of them are these enigmatic sites with these cyclopean stones. So they can't figure out who built them, how are they actually assembled, transported, erected, crafted. But what these sites are not currently aligned to north. And so the hypothesis is that these sites, because they were previously, or if they were built when the pole was in an earlier position, and they were aligned to north, they're misaligned now because of these shifts. And so if we can use the climate information that Hapgood used in dating these poles to say, okay, now these poles are 50,000 or 100,000 years old, and these sites align to those poles, then those sites by association or inference must similarly be 50 or 100,000 years old. And so the technology is what we see on the ground. It's what's left. It's these stone structures that defy explanation. So, you know, the book doesn't have anything really to say on how it was done.
Right.
I speculate a little bit about who it might have been, but I think establishing that these sites are incredibly old is an important first step, and it takes us beyond this. You know, there's this sort of 10,000-year thing going back to, to Zeptepi and things that, might have taken place soon after, the last, quote-unquote, flood. Or if you're using the pole shift hypothesis, after the last pole shift from Hudson Bay to the current location. But that takes you to Atlantis. With two more pole shifts, you can actually go before Atlantis and now actually see a pattern that's not just sites aligned to that Hudson Bay pole, but sites aligned to a pole in the Norway Sea, in Greenland, and in the Bering Sea. These are refined pole locations that I came up with that are close to Hapgood's, but I've been able to refine them using the site information. I have a technical paper coming out on this in the spring. But all the results are in the book, and they're all, pictures and maps and graphics.
It's laid out.
All laid out pretty clearly.
Some people believe, Mark, that we are the Martians. Is that anything close to your equation?
George, I never found anything I could say, definitively that, yes, there are ETs or aliens. There's so much circumstantial evidence. But it was, when I started off on this, the implication, a lot of people in the past, and it began with von Däniken with the ancient astronaut theory, was
yeah.
Only ancient astronauts had the technology to do this. And so I wondered, we just had it's sort of all these coincidences. We had just done our DNA testing, and that whole it's all based on the out of Africa theory that, modern humans emerged out of Africa about 70,000 years ago, and by tracing the genetic changes, you can determine your lineage and all this other information. And rather than looking at extraterrestrial hypothesis, I thought I'd try something a little different. It's like, what about an earlier migration of humans out of Africa?
Mm-hmm.
Now the current theory is that there were earlier migrations, and these earlier migrations led to the Neanderthals and to the Denisovans. And so it's like, perhaps these earlier people who had hundreds of thousands of years to develop, perhaps they developed a technological civilization. I mean, we have. Perhaps they did as well. And perhaps developing this on Earth, they were the ones that were responsible for these earlier structures.
Sure. And ours is only 2,000 years old, so imagine what theirs could have been.
Exactly. So this led me sort of in a different direction. So maybe the Martians were us. I don't know.
That could be. That could very well be. Now, back to location, because you did say that these structures are all over the planet. Are we talking about massive civilizations scattered everywhere or just in one geographical spot?
So this is a cool thing. Because it's not just one location or a small number of locations, mm-hmm. it's not just Egypt or it's not just, the Andes. When I started looking at the distribution of sites, it's like, this is a worldwide phenomenon. The earliest sites, those aligned to the Bering Sea pole, exist in South America, in the Andes region, in Europe, in Northern Africa. And what I do in the book is I actually plot out the locations of sites worldwide as a function of time. And so you start with this earliest set of sites, 100,000 years or so back, and then there's a pole shift, and the pole shifts from the Bering Sea to the Norway Sea. And soon after that, there are sites that show up on the coast of South America, places like Caralsupe, and these are sites that are in a tremendous state of ruin along the Pacific coast, and sites in Central America, places like Chichen Itza and Tulum, and numerous other sites, some temples in India. And so you go from one pole shift to another, and then there's another set of sites that are aligned to the Greenland pole and then the Hudson Bay pole and, of course, the current pole. And so you get, for each pole shift, you get a distribution of sites showing up, and you see a certain pattern. And it's a worldwide phenomenon. These occurred everywhere, for the most part, except in the extreme north and south, where the poles existed, and then I plot this against the migration patterns of modern humans, and you find some really interesting correlations, which kind of led to this whole idea that perhaps this earlier civilization were the ones that that early humans saw as gods as they ran into them.
Good point.
It wasn't someone coming from the sky, but it was people that had already established themselves as a civilization on this planet, and they were as we migrated out of Africa and we encountered them. This was the source of ancient myth and stories.
And maybe they had flying machines. Well, maybe they did come out of the sky, but they were here.
Maybe they did, but they were here, exactly. Yes.
I mean, in ancient India, they talk about Vimanas and flying machines. Gosh, who knows what we had then?
Right, right. So it's a different kind of hypothesis, and what's cool about this is that this is really at the forefront of genetic science and archaeology and anthropology these days, and so it's like, if we can tie this to scientific research and results, that would be really cool, because it gives you something solid to rest your analysis on, rather than just being pure speculation. I've always needed. I can't speculate. I have to have some physical basis for what I'm doing. And so that I saw this whole genetic approach as being another avenue, another possibility.
Mark, wouldn't you love to be in a time machine to go back to these time periods and verify everything we've been talking about?
Absolutely. It's sort of like archaeoastronomy and radiocarbon dating and radiometric dating. These are all time machines that we can use to go back. And, what I'm kind of proposing in this book is that pole shifts are a new kind of time machine. If we can establish that they've existed, they might be a new kind of time machine for actually dating things that are much older than radiocarbon, that only allows you to go back 50,000 years ago, and it might be a new way of gaining some insight on some of these ancient structures. So it's all about time.
What would you say, Mark, of everything that you discovered could be considered to be the most dramatic?
I think it's the number of sites. I think if I had just found a few, it would be like, this is an interesting coincidence.
Right, but they're everywhere.
But I have 50 sites across the planet that, and anyone can do this, and it's in the book. You can go to those locations, or you can search on say the Acropolis,
mm-hmm.
on the Parthenon atop the Acropolis in Athens, and you can put your cursor there, and you can go to the Greenland Pole that I give in the location in the book, and you see that meridian, that line, points exactly at that pole, and if you rotate Google Earth so that pole is now the North Pole, the Parthenon faces exactly north, south, east, and west. And this is true for all of these other structures. So it's like, okay, if pole shifts didn't occur, if this is just a coincidence,
right.
One heck of a coincidence, because how can 50 sites be so accurately aligned to four points on the planet?
There are no coincidences, Mark, as you know. Stay with us. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back with more. Mark Carlotto, his latest work, Before Atlantis, his website, beforeatlantis.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll also take your phone calls with him next on Coast to Coast AM.